The following is a 1500 ESPN Twin Cities production.
Raised on basketball, raised in front of a computer screen, raised for covering the game, raised by Wolves. Now, talking all things Timberwolves with beat writer Derek James, here's Benny Hill with the Raised by Wolves podcast.
Yes, indeed, it's another edition of Raised by Wolves. We are presented to you by TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand and official TV of the Minnesota Timberwolves. I'm Manny Hill. Derek James is here. We're back here for another week. Thanks again to Kyle Radke for joining us last week. That was a lot of fun catching up
with
him.
It's always a good time. It wasn't the longest episode we've had, but it's still, you know, it's quality, not necessarily quantity sometimes.
Yeah, and Kyle, of course, is, I think he's enjoying his week off that he, his off-season sort of week off before.
Unofficial week off.
Right. Shout out to Kyle, though. Thanks for listening. Lots to get into this week. Some big news surrounding the Wolves.
Why can't this team just be normal?
Yeah.
This has been the playoffs for the first time in 14 years, and things couldn't be worse.
Yeah, that's the weird thing is that you look
at... Was Target Center actually built on an Indian burial ground?
Right. I mean, because you look at, okay, first playoff season in 14 years. They improved by 16 wins this year. Yet, you know, there's so much angst, you know, towards, you know, the head coach and certain players that are not here anymore and all that stuff. So the season ends, and then, you know, we get the news this week.
Don't forget the Jimmy Butler stuff, too.
Yeah.
His comments and Bernie Lee, his agent.
Right.
I mean, talking about, you know, I could see myself going back to Chicago one day, and then Bernie Lee saying, well, maybe the Wolves should be recruiting Jimmy Butler. Like, what kind of crap is that? And that's not what I wanted to say.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of different things to digest. And obviously the elephant in the room this week has been Rick Brunson, assistant coach, resigning.
Turns out might not be a very good guy.
Yeah, I mean, there's just a lot there. And I will be honest, I wasn't even aware of the previous situation from a couple of years ago.
I had not heard a thing.
I did not know about it all, and it was a story. I mean, I looked up the stories from it, and it was dated from that time.
It's not hard to find. Maybe because Rick Brunson, you know, isn't a very prominent player. Yeah, like he had a career, and I'm like, oh, Rick Brunson played in the NBA. Couldn't tell you anything else about him.
Played at Temple and all that, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, if you didn't know, he was alleged sexually assaulted a masseuse in Chicago while pretending to be Patrick Ewing and using Patrick Ewing as an alias, which is weird in itself, and he was acquitted. But we all know with sexual assault, an acquittal doesn't mean much. There are lots of reasons why sexual assault is acquitted, not necessarily, and actually very rarely, that the plaintiff is lying.
Right.
That's rarely the case.
Right. So he steps down and there's just all sorts of stuff, you know.
Why don't you just fire him? I mean, at that point, I mean, you knew about that when you hired him, and then you want to put out this statement about, you know, oh, you know, his actions don't align with the new allegations and all that and the prior stuff, you know, doesn't align with, you know, our organization's standards and blah, blah, blah. But you hired him, and none of the other even player signings seem like you're remotely concerned about any sort of anti-sexual assault culture and culture where everyone feels safe. And I mean, this comes, you know, in the wake of the Dallas Mavericks stuff that had just
in this settled. Climate right now. I mean, it is
not just in the league.
Not that there's a good time for any of this stuff to come out or happen. Obviously, I'm not saying that, but in this particular climate right now, with so many different things coming out and being uncovered and things that we didn't even know about that were going on, for this to be happening, man, I mean, it's not a good look. I mean, it is not a good look at all. And this is going to be a big summer for, I mean, not just for basketball reasons, but I think for off the court stuff. I mean, there's going to have to be some serious conversations, I think, going on in that organization right now.
Yeah, I mean, we like to make, you know, where we've, you know, in the past, you know, about probably a decade ago, there are a lot of jokes about the Vikings, you know, and their arrest track record. And hey, when you have
the Love Boat and all that.
Yeah, when you have 2.5 times the roster, you're going to have probably 2.5 times the problems. That's not unusual. And like people have said, it's probably lower than in your own place of work anyway, you know, the rate of, you know, instances. But it just seems like with this team and this culture that there's just such a disregard for those things, and the focus is on, well, this is what they can do on the basketball court, which, fine, but what, there's a message that you're sending.
Yeah.
Still, I mean, to the people that are following this team and to the people that, you know, want to feel good about how, you know, how they invest their time. There have been, you know, fans on Twitter talking like, how do I justify, you know, to my spouse that I spend the time watching this team that does this? You know, and are you really being a good citizen in the community by aligning yourselves with these people? And, you know, and I'm not saying that no one should ever get a second chance, but there just seems to be such a disregard for things like this that are so horrific.
It's starting to become kind of a trend, which is unfortunate. And I don't know if it's, I mean, I don't want to think that it's intentional, but it just, it, when you just look at players that have been signed in the past, just in the last couple of years, and now, you know, the Rick Brunson situation, Are they just not? I don't think they care.
Yeah, I really don't think they care.
Yeah, that's just not good. I mean, there's got to be some, in this climate and these times right now with so many different things going on. I mean, you just got to start having some conversations about this stuff and really start looking at yourselves in the mirror and saying, look, we got to start doing some more due diligence on this stuff. We can't just start bringing people in that.
But they have to take it seriously. I mean,
yes,
Tom Thibodeau absolutely. Is a 60-year-old white man. I mean, and the times that he grew up in, this probably would have been, we don't talk about that. Yeah. You know, but now these are different times, and this is in the social media age where anything can get out. And it seems like part of this reaction is a concern is, well, if we get out in front of this, it's going to look a lot better than if, you know, Mark Stein or Woj or someone else scoops the story or someone comes forward. And then that's a really bad look because then it looks like you're trying to hide something. But it still looks like, you know, they knew that there's probably a chance that this could get out and that it would be even more damaging than it already is.
Yeah. They did make some other changes this week with coaching changes. A few other people have been let go. And
video assistant, a shooting coach. Which, jokingly, you know, probably the shooting coach on this team. But it's always unfortunate people lose their jobs. And then the guy who helped make Karl Anthony Towns an all-star, who's actually a year younger than me, which feels really weird.
Yeah. So they've made some changes. And, I mean, I don't know. You know, it's hard for me on the outside looking in to really, like, decide if, you know, these staff changes are, you know, well, that's a good move or that's a bad move. And you know, if they bring somebody else in, well, that's great because he's going to help with, I mean, we really don't know because so much of it too, I think, is just with relationships and how you're able to connect and reach certain players if you're trying to develop guys. And I mean, there's so much of that goes into it too. So it's really hard to tell like what, you know, what effect or what impact it's going to have. But it is very interesting that you have the kind of season that they had and they improved the way that they did and they're making fairly significant changes to the staff. And, I mean, I guess we just don't really know why they were making those changes.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's good to see that they're not resting on their laurels and maybe they really did just see that there is a gap between them and the Warriors and the Rockets, and maybe you don't have to be exactly those teams, but to put yourself in position to beat them in a 7-game series, they see how far away they are. And let's be real. The only reason they had a chance to win, they won the game against Houston that they did in that series, and why they had a chance to win game one is the Rockets just couldn't make anything.
Right. James Harden was the only guy who could make a shot that night.
And Harden didn't even play that well in that entire series.
Right.
Aside from, you know, the one, I think he had what? He got to the line well, and that's why his numbers look a lot better than they did, or they would have otherwise.
Yeah. So some changes going on in Timberwolves land this week, and there's still, I mean, we still haven't technically hit the NBA offseason. I mean, the Wolves are done for the season, obviously.
Conference finals matchups just got set as we tape this.
Yeah. I mean, okay. I'm glad you brought that up, Because I want to address something.
Is this going to be a rage against the conference finals?
No, I have no problem with the conference finals. Good, good. I have no problem with the conference finals matchups at all. I think they're great matchups. I think both series have a chance to be really, really good. I'm leaning towards another Golden State Cleveland final. At least that's
I'm good with that, actually.
Yeah, and I'm okay with that. I mean, it's.
Oh, I think I know where you're going with this, though.
But what I'm just getting tired of is this notion that, and I heard Mackey talking about it this morning, too, on Mackey and Judd, of this notion about, wow, the end, just tired of the NBA being so predictable, and it's just, you know, we know who the team. Okay. Did everybody starting this season, did they have an idea of who the four teams were going to be?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you still watched up to now anyway.
And you still watched, and we still watched, and their ratings are still good. And people are still, like, at the start of the year, I figured, yeah, it's probably going to be Golden State and Houston in the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah.
And I was okay with that because I want to see that.
I want to see this has always been my
I
take
want to see that.
On parity. I mean, when I watched, you know, a lot of football, you know, it was like, well, there are a lot of, you know, okay teams and maybe that one great team at the top. And it's like, wow, anyone could have a chance. And it's like, that might be, the league might think that's great, having all these fan bases think they have a shot, but it just feels more watered down.
Let me interrupt you for a second, though. Let's think about that for a second, too. Is there more parity in the NFL than there is in the NBA? Sure. But let's think about this for a second. In the AFC, in the last 15 years, there has been either a Brady, a Roethlisberger, or a Manning in every Super Bowl in the last 15 years, except for the one that Joe Flacco was in.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what are we doing here? It's not like, you know, the NHL, we're finally going to see somebody this year. With the Penguins getting bounced out the other night, we're finally going to see somebody other than Pittsburgh, Chicago, L.A., or Boston hoist the Stanley Cup for the first time in like a decade.
Wouldn't the reaction to the Penguins winning that Game 7 have been, oh, the Penguins again? But the reason why you watch these series and for those seven games is for something like, oh, the other team takes Game 7.
Yeah.
Instead of them. I mean, now the Capitals Cleveland are in, and Ovechkin is another great storyline.
Right, exactly. Oh, look what happened 2 years ago in the NBA Finals. The Warriors have a 3-1 lead, a 73-win team.
Draymond punches LeBron in the crotch.
Right. The 73-win team that everybody's saying, oh, yeah, they're the greatest team ever. Are they the greatest? Could they beat the 96 Bulls? Yada, yada, yada. And then they blow a 3-1 lead to LeBron James, who puts on an all-time performance in a Game 7, him and Kyrie Irving.
That was amazing.
That nobody saw that coming. When it was 3-1 Golden State, Cleveland was done. That's what everybody was saying.
Yeah, and what happened? Oh, well, what does this mean for LeBron's career and this or that? And it's like, hold on. And then we see that. Now, that may not happen again this year, but I want to see the best of the best this time of year. I don't want to see, you know, the Bucks make it this far and get trounced in 4 games, or I don't want to see the Warriors beat up on the Pacers. You know, I want to see the best of the best, the two best teams. I don't think everyone also deserves a chance. Like I said that to you too. Like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
The teams
be better.
Yeah.
Be better and you will get there.
Exactly.
if you're not better, you won't get there. That's the way it is. College football is the same thing. How many teams, we go into every college football season thinking 120-some FBS programs across the country, about, if you're really being honest, about 6 or 7 of them have a legit shot at winning the national championship. And if we're really thinking about it, it's really only about 3 or 4 teams. Mm-hmm. And those 3 or 4 teams are Alabama, Oklahoma, Ohio State, and I guess the last couple of years, Clemson.
Yeah.
But otherwise, we know Alabama's going to be there every year. We know they're going to be there, especially now that it's expanded to a 4-team playoff. Alabama's been there every year. So it's not – I just get annoyed when the NBA is the only one that gets beat up for this.
Mm-hmm.
They're the only ones that people rip on for – being predictable when there's predictability in every sport, in every league.
Yeah.
Even the WNBA, who we, you know, here in Minnesota, it's obviously very popular here in this state because of the success of the Lynx. But last year, what was everybody talking about?
It's going to be the season started.
Before the season started, it was going to be the Lynx and the Sparks. And what was it? The last 2 years, it's been the Lynx and the Sparks.
And those finals were fun.
Yes.
I don't need to see Dallas and the Lynx, and the Lynx win every game by 40. Just like I don't need to see much of this Miami Heat team past, I don't know, the second round. I don't need to see them in the conference. I don't need to see them anymore. I want the Celtics and the Cavaliers, or, you know, like the Sixers could have even been fun, but really with that experience going against that inexperience, how long would that series have been?
Right. And you know what? The Sixers, it's not time for them this year.
No, not you everyone know? Deserves to have a shot at a title every single year. That is ridiculous.
Yeah, you have to. I mean, and to be honest, to me, I think it even makes it more impressive. As in the NBA's case, I think it makes it more impressive if you do have like a Dallas in 2011 sort of coming out of nowhere and winning the title, because I think that makes that championship for the Mavericks even more significant.
Everyone's going to remember that.
Because of how hard it is to win a championship in the NBA when you have dominant teams. So when Dallas comes in with a 30-plus-year-old Dirk Nowitzki and Sean Marion and Tyson Chandler and those guys and Jason Terry, guys that are all like, have been in the league for a long time, they're all like 30-plus and, you know, they're kind of going on the tail end of their careers.
That's the thing. Two young teams don't win and two old teams don't win either.
Right. And then when the Mavericks do it out of nowhere and they beat this super team Miami Heat in six games, you're like, holy,
Yeah.
Look at that. So I don't know, man. That stuff just drives me nuts when people are like, oh, I just can't stand the NBA. It's so predictable. Yeah, every league is like this, man.
Like Well, aside from the most recent Avengers movie, you go to see like Black Panther or Iron Man or Spider-Man. Do you think they're killing Tony Stark or Peter Parker? No. You know they're pulling this one out somehow.
Now somebody who's listening to this.
Well, actually, shut up. I don't care.
Well, what I was going to say is somebody who's listening to this who has not seen Infinity War yet is probably mad at you now.
They don't know the details. And we're all going to see the next part anyway, so. Have you seen Infinity War yet?
Yes, I did. I saw it earlier this week.
We have my guy, Russ Farner, on at some point.
Okay. Great.
Now that everyone else have like 3 weeks to see it, so we'll have like, okay, stop listening. And like, really, stop listening if you don't want to spoil this movie. And then, because, I mean, 3 weeks is enough time. Yeah, where if you really, really care, you will have seen it.
And see, and I'm the guy, too. Like, I don't care about spoilers. You could tell me everything that's going to happen.
I still want to see how it happens.
Verbatim, and I will still want to go see it.
Yeah.
Like, when I watched Breaking Bad, because I didn't watch Breaking Bad when it was on. So I binge-watched it, like, a year or so later after it was done.
Mm-hmm. It's probably the way to go at that point.
Yeah. And I knew when I first started watching it, I knew, Walt dies at the end. But I didn't care. I wanted to watch the show because everybody talked about how good it was. So I wanted to see the process. I wanted to see how the show went. So I don't care about spoilers.
The finale was so good, too. Oh, like, you still just had to watch through to that.
Oh, it was fantastic. It was fantastic. We have a guest this week. Meredith Minko is going to join us.
Yeah, Meredith Minko, Bleacher Report, used to actually work for the Timberwolves. She's actually early, which is always nice. And now we're the ones who are like, we're going to be right on time, actually.
Right. So let's talk to Meredith next. All right. Joining us now on Raised by Wolves, presented to you, by the way, by TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand and official TV of the Minnesota Timberwolves. Meredith Minko is with us. You are with Bleacher Report now. You've done social media, I think, with the Wolves and Lynx in the past. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're good.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
How are you so able to go from, so you were working for the team, which is where I think I first met you, and then you go to work for Bleacher Report in San Francisco. How did you become such a part of Wolves Twitter, too? Because you don't really see that transition a lot.
It's pretty new, I would say. I really hadn't started using Twitter until I got the job with the Wolves, which it was like an internship type thing. and I had to do some research for that, being social media associate. I started doing some research on, like, Wolves Twitter, learned more about it, and got to know, like, the people that are involved, all the wonderful people that are involved with Wolves Twitter. And then when I moved to Bleacher Report, like, a year ago, I was, like, more able to get involved with Wolves Twitter and kind of speak my mind and kind of come at it in a different way than when I was with the team. But, yeah, I've been involved with Wolves Twitter for probably, like, a year now, and I love it. It's so much fun. I don't think I could watch a game without looking at Twitter and my phone, just because all the opinions on what's going on makes it so interesting. And, yeah, I really enjoyed it. Got to meet a lot of cool people from it.
What have you noticed from fans this year? I mean, we know that, I mean, we're talking about a 14-year playoff drought here, and, you know, finally they get over that hump, they get into the playoffs. What difference did you notice, you know, interacting from people this year as opposed to years past? If there was any difference at all?
Yeah, I definitely think there was a huge difference, and I think that I've seen from, like, an outsider perspective, a lot of people look at Wolves Twitter and they kind of question why people can be kind of negative sometimes. But coming at it from a fan's point of view, like, the past couple years, or, I mean, a lot of years exactly, the slogan has been, like, all about the future and building up these, like, young assets that we have and developing and just looking forward to the future, and there's always next year, and it was more of like a hopeful thing. And this year I think that obviously there were huge expectations for this team, and I feel like all of Wolves Twitter kind of had a similar view on the team that they were watching, which was kind of cool to see, because no one really got no one was really, like, satisfied with just the playoff spot. Everyone kind of saw and picked up the same things, like, characteristics about the team this year from watching, and from an outside perspective it could seem kind of negative, but I thought it was kind of cool that all of Wolves Twitter together kind of had the same collective, like, expectations for the team, and they weren't just going to settle for an eighth seed. They wanted more.
Well, I think part of that too is they held that third, fourth seeds for almost the entire season.
Yeah,
Jimmy gets
exactly.
hurt, and then they drop off, and it's like, but we've seen that they can be so much better and do so much more, and then just mm-hmm. to get kind of what they got and really just have all their flaws exposed. I mean, it's great for the team to get.
And
over
then
the
having
hump.
To win on the last day of the regular season just to get into.
They
the
deserve
playoffs.
That. They yeah. deserve that for the way they've played at times.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
So, take me through, you know, how you got to Bleacher Report. Like, what was that process like for you? What sort of drew you to going with them and moving out? And how was the move to San Francisco for you?
So, I got the job just off of my experience with the Wolves and Lynx. I did an internship, like I said, with the Wolves and Lynx, and I think it was, I started October 2016, and I stayed there for the Wolves season, and my first day was actually the day after the Lynx won the championship.
Nice.
And everyone was celebrating. They went to Prince's Place for the private concert. I got to work at, like, 9 a.m. all ready to go, and there was no one in office, and I was like, what is going on? Where am I working?
It was probably back home nursing their wounds from the night before.
Exactly. People came in at, like, noon, hungover, and I was, like, all ready to go on my first day. But, yeah, so I was there through Wolves season, and then half of a Lynx season, and then I applied for the position at Bleacher Report just because I was a big fan, and I was kind of looking. My internship was almost over with the Wolves, and I needed something full-time, and they got back to me just from applying online, had an interview, and they said that they wanted me to move within a month to San Francisco, and I'd never been here before, and I didn't know anyone, and it was a big leap, but I'm so excited that I did, and I met a lot of good people, and the company is amazing. I don't have enough good things to say about it. And I still get to tweet about the Wolves as a fan and go to games as a media member. And, yeah, it's basically the best of all worlds at this point.
That sounds awesome. What kind of – so then do you go to, like, Warriors games or just all kinds of different stuff?
I get to go to Warriors games. I did a Bleacher Report Instagram story takeover for the game for the Wolves Rockets game, the one game playoff game that they won. I got to go to Minnesota. I saw you there.
Mm-hmm.
And do like an Instagram takeover for BR and do some like behind the scenes stuff with Kat, and then they want us to do that same thing for the Wolves and Rockets series. So I'll be doing like a Instagram story takeover for VR, and we have like company tickets, and they kind of raffle off who gets to go. But I've been to like a good amount of Warriors games. I had never been to Oracle before. It's totally different than how it seems on TV. But yeah, I've been able to go to a lot of games, and then hoping to go to some Lynx and Sparks games this summer. So.
Yeah, that was the thing that I noticed too in going to another arena. It's always interesting in seeing how different they are. Like when I went to a Bulls game at United Center, I was like, wow, this is so different. And it's really just amazing.
What'd you think?
What's that?
Yeah. What'd you think of the United Center?
I thought it was cool to see all the history there and how they balance all the Blackhawks and Bulls stuff, because there's just so much history in that building. But I thought that the presentation was a little more toned down. Like, Wolves games are very loud, and maybe that's different because just about every Wolves game I go to, I'm in media row and courtside, so all the music is right on top of you. But it seems like you can hear yourself think a little better, and it was pretty entertaining. I forget, what was the in-game bit? I can't remember. But it was funny.
Yeah, they sell out like every game there.
I had joked on Twitter that Michael Jordan's biggest accomplishment was getting people to still sell out every Bulls game since he retired.
It's so funny because I'm from Chicago, so I grew up going to Bulls games, and like none of my friends know sports at all. They just like to go to Bulls games just because, but they all just assume that the team is good just always, and they're always like, yeah, we get to go to a Bulls game, it's gonna be so fun. Like, I'm like, you have no idea. They all like, if they score 100 points, you'll be lucky. Like, they think they're seeing like playoff basketball.
They've had some successful teams, but yeah, they haven't been very fun. I mean, certainly, and you know, like since Jordan retired in the last 20 years especially.
Mm-hmm.
It seems,
I mean, speaking of that, like that Derrick Rose, Jimmy, Taj, Ronnie Brewer,
Ronnie Brewer.
Oh my God. I fell in love with basketball watching that team play, and they were so awesome. They, just the way they played, grit, and I don't know.
Wow, you've been indoctrinated by Tibbs, Meredith. You just dropped a grit.
You're right. After I said it, I was like, oh no.
Well, I mean, the Bulls now, I mean, it seems like they've got something cooking now. I mean, they're still a ways away, I think, from contending again, but they seem like they've got, with, you know, with LaVine, hopefully LaVine, Zach can come back again healthy next year, and, you know, and Chris Dunn showed a lot of improvement this year over last year.
You've got to understand that Chris Dunn was never going to get that same opportunity here. Like,
right.
Why'd they let Dunn go? Well, because they weren't going to play him like that. Anyway, man.
Right. But
there's an interview, like, I can't remember who it was with, but like, just him saying that first year in Minnesota just killed his confidence, and it just was not a good fit at all, and he feels like a completely different player with the Bulls. It's just like, I don't know, it was kind of sad to me, because he's good. He just did, like he said, he did not fit in Minnesota, and Tibbs was not going to play him, so he's definitely in like best case scenario.
I'm not surprised.
Terms of like,
but I'm not surprised by any of that.
Yeah, but in terms of like young core, I feel like there's so many good young cores around the league right now. Like,
right.
Obviously, we're seeing right now with Boston and the Sixers, and I think the Bulls are—they're not quite at that level, obviously, but they have a lot of good pieces.
Right. I mean, Markkanen's Markkanen was a lot better this year than I thought he was going to be. I mean, I figured he'd be an okay player. Yeah, but he was really, really good this year as, you know, for a rookie.
He broke a record, I think, like three-pointers made for a rookie. I really enjoyed watching Bulls games this year, and not just because, like, Levine and Dunn, their young core is really good.
I feel like this core better suits what Hoiberg wants to do rather than having Taj Gibson and Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade and Rajon Rondo. It just seems so unfair and counterintuitive to what Hoiberg wants to do offensively.
Yeah, and that was so clear by the end of when that group was together, like Wade and Rondo and Jimmy. It just, like, it was not meshing at all with the way Hoiberg wanted to play things out.
Meredith Minko is with us here on the Raised by Wolves podcast. She works with Bleacher Report, formerly with the Wolves and Lynx social media outlets. Speaking of the Lynx, let's talk about them for a second, because they have, I mean, it is really amazing the way they have sort of captivated sports fans in this state just in the last, you know, I mean, with the last couple of championships that they won. But really, this goes back to when Lindsey Whalen came back here. And I mean, really, ever since then, the way they've just sort of captivated everybody is just been great. It's been a lot of fun. It's been a fun ride.
I remember my first, it was like a year or two ago, but I worked the whole Wolves season, and I was getting ready to start Lynx season, and I didn't really know much about the Lynx. I was doing a ton of research, and my manager was like, just wait till you see a Lynx game. It's going to blow you away. And I was so confused. I was like, what could be, I don't know. I was so like enamored with the Wolves season just because that was my first time being up close with the NBA team. But my first Lynx game, I'll never forget. It gets so loud and the fans are so diehard and everyone's dancing and having a good time. And it's like such a wide range of people, like families, older people, younger people. They all really rally around the team, and the community around the Lynx is so strong. I encourage everyone to go to a Lynx game because they're on a different level, I feel like.
I remember, you know, for the longest time, the Lynx were always the palate cleanser for Wolves season, so I always like going and watching Lynx games. I know my first Lynx game was a finals game, but they went odd years, so probably 2015, and I was just blown away. Like you said, like, it really is. It's like you're not used to that at Target Center, and I mean, I didn't experience anything like that since the 0-2 playoffs, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. Even that first Wolves playoff game that I went to, it was really loud in there, but still I was like, compared to a Lynx playoff game, this, it was crazy, but the energy in a Lynx playoff game is just unreal.
Especially when it's at Williams Arena. You weren't, you know,
I wish I had gone.
Oh, yeah, that place is loud.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been in Williams Arena for some Gopher basketball games in the past, and it gets really, really loud in that place, because just the way the sound just sort of bounces off the roof and the pillars and everything, just the way it hits you is incredible. How much, Meredith, how much interaction with Lynx players, you know, when you were working here, how much interaction did you have with players, and how was that?
I had a lot of interaction with them, and the thing about WNBA players is that, like, obviously being around the Lynx, you're around the best of the best, and these are world-class athletes, but none of them have egos. They're all super inviting to media and anyone who's around the team. They're really funny and they like to joke around, and they kind of welcome, I mean, obviously you guys know, they welcome people with open arms. The NBA players are like that as well, but I just think with the WNBA, because they don't get the respect that they deserve, they're hypersensitive to being respectful to everybody else. And I just love being around that team and being around the players. It's just so crazy to be around, like, Maya Moore, Sylvia Fowles, players that are the best of the best, and they literally have no ego.
It really is impressive. I mean, with how successful they are, you know, in their league, in their own, you know, in their game, and, you know, wherever they go, they're successful. And like you said, they're just so mm-hmm. down to earth. And I mean, Sylvia Fowles, I mean, last year I was there when she accepted her MVP, and, you know, she's hugging Coach Reeve, and, you know, the tears of joy and just that emotion that you mm-hmm. rarely get. Like, if in the NBA, like, you get it, like LeBron James, you know, winning the title in Cleveland or something like that.
Yeah.
Something significant like mm-hmm. that. But it's just so cool that you see, you really feel like you get as close to the real person as you can get from, you know, a public figure like that.
100%. Especially with Sylvia Fowles, it's surprising because she's, what, like 6'5"?
Yeah. Something like that.
So tall and, like, such a dominant player. And her personality, like, could not be further than her, like, on-court persona. She's, like, so soft-spoken, so nice to everybody. She's just, like, a super kind person. They all really are just genuinely great people.
So, if I'm not mistaken, the All-Star Game is coming here this summer, right?
Yes.
The WNBA. You're gonna make it up here?
I am indeed. I have plans to go to that. I watched the one last year in Seattle, and it just seemed super fun. Even through the TV, it just seemed like they were all having such a good time. And I mean, obviously, it's a perfect place to have the All-Star Game this year. Links have a majority of the All-Stars every year, and with the new arena, I'm super excited to watch them play in the new arena as well. But yeah, I'm definitely coming for the All-Star Game.
I know that I'm going to have a credential for that too, just because, you know, like, this, even having like Elena Deladon,
yeah,
you know, there last mm-hmm. year for the Mystics here, it's like, this is a former MVP. Like, this is awesome. And then, you know, we've had Nneka Nwumike, and, you know, just the great Sparks teams, but all, you know, getting the Tina Charleses and everyone else.
Obviously, that Brianna Stewart, who's an up-and-coming, really talented young player.
Kelsey Plum, all the talented players in this league. I mean, it's really the best time to get into women's basketball. And I think for anyone looking to get into it and just want to see the showcase of talent, that's going to be the game to watch, I think.
100%. In the league right now, I feel like, I don't know, I feel like I'm seeing kind of a turn on Twitter, at least. I've seen a lot of people be like, I've never watched the WNBA, but I think this year will be the year that I start. And it's literally the perfect year. Like, it's funny because it seems like in the WNBA, all the players kind of are in their prime when they're in, like, when they hit, like, 30 and up. And I feel like last year there was kind of a big gap between, like, let's say, like, the Lynx players and the up and coming young talent. Like, Kelsey Plum kind of struggled last year, but in the WNBA draft this year, there's so much talent, and it's just going to be, I feel like it's going to be so fun to watch this year.
I want to talk to you about Becky Hammon. I think it's the coolest thing on the planet that she is getting interviews for head coaching jobs.
And some people could not be more upset about an interview.
Right. Yeah.
It's so funny because it's an interview.
Right.
Like, she hasn't even gotten a job yet.
Right. She's skipping the line, whatever that means.
I mean, I don't know. It kind of, like, upset me, but it's nothing that I'm not used to at this point. Every time I post something on our BR account that's national, that's about women, it's just, the mentions are just shambles, and I always tell myself not to look, but I don't know. It kind of hurt a little more coming from hearing that from people that I kind of consider to be, like, they know the game, and they're kind of in a position to, when they talk, people listen, and to hear that with just, like, I just don't understand why she makes people angry when she's been an assistant coach. Every single assistant coach for Pop gets an interview everywhere. That's just how it works. And she's proven herself. I feel like she's a legend in the WNBA, which I guess people don't consider to be.
That was the weird thing. NBA,
but yeah.
I mean, Jason Kidd went straight from playing to an NBA sideline, And that was like, yeah. What? Why do we think he's a good coach other than he was a great player?
Well, that's what mm-hmm. trips me out about the thing with Becky is like, well, people say, well, we don't know if she can coach yet. Well, you have that's the mindset you have with anybody that gets an interview. Like that's yeah. you're I mean, always thinking that. Yeah. So I don't understand why it has to be such a
yeah.
Well, I was just gonna.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I keep cutting you off. Go ahead.
No. It's just they had her coaching summer league head coach, and I think maybe 2 years ago, I think they won the summer league championship. And like, yeah. She's not just coming out of nowhere. Like, she's been in the sport for so many years. She's well respected. It's just, I don't know. It kind of goes back to the idea that people who, like, every NBA player you talk to respects WNBA players, and they learn from them, and they're big fans, and most people that criticize the WNBA don't really know, have not watched it, or they just assume things, and I feel like she's kind of getting that treatment in this avenue as well, and that, like, people are just kind of assuming things, and they're not taking the time to do research.
Yeah, it's amazing, too. You know, we had Kyle Ratke in here last week, and, you know, the web editor for Wolves or Timberwolves.com, we were talking about Lindsay Whalen getting the Gopher job, and how there are some people saying, wow, you know, she has no experience, and oh, how is she? It's like, well, come on. Like,
she has 20 years being the best at what she's done on a basketball court.
It's like, come on, what are we talking about here? Like, give me a break.
Yeah, and she's already, like, she's already recruited, I think, like, I've seen on Twitter, like, two players. And
Two four-stars, I think.
And while she's doing, like, link stuff and multitasking, and she's probably one of the most well-known Gophers of all time and is, like, a god in Minnesota. And if someone like her can't get respect, and I don't know, it just kind of makes you wonder.
See, the weird thing for me, like, I grew up, you know, I loved basketball. So, 97, the WNBA came out. It was like, cool, there's another professional sports league that's, you know, supported by the NBA where I can still get my fix in between. And so, you know, I don't have that same, for me personally, that same, you know, disconnect with the league where it's like, oh, well, you know, it's not the same experience. Or, you know, what do they know? Oh, it sucks. Because, you know, like, I grew up watching Tina Thompson and Cheryl Swoops and... Yeah. Rebecca Lobo,
Cynthia Cooper.
Yeah, all those great teams. Mm-hmm. It is ridiculous that the Houston Comets are not around anymore. And
that is
the first
a shame. That is such a shame that the Comets are not around anymore.
And like, Becky Hammon is going to be a Hall of Famer for her work and her contributions to the women's game. And if there's any, I mean, she is one of the few people on this earth that, you know, we could probably pull this off at where she's at now. She spent a few seasons on an NBA sideline. I don't think she would have hung around as an assistant if she couldn't, you know, command a locker room, if she couldn't lead. Or if she didn't have the knowledge. Yeah. I don't think she would still be here if she couldn't potentially be successful at another, you know, the next step.
And she's been coaching under Pop, for goodness sakes. Like, come on, people. You know, come on. I mean, yeah, it's just, it's so ridiculous. But Becky's going to get a shot, you know, even if she doesn't get, you know, hired this year, she's going to get an opportunity to be a head coach.
And I definitely think that Cheryl Reeves could also be an NBA coach.
Oh, without question.
I feel like she'd be a great NBA coach. I think she was on a podcast a couple weeks ago and said she wouldn't mind being an NBA coach.
Jim Suhan show, maybe?
I think it might have been Jim Suhan's. Podcast.
I don't know her podcast itinerary, though.
Someone ran a poll that said, would you rather have Cheryl Reaver kids coaching the Wolves next season? There was an overwhelming majority for Cheryl Reaver.
No way. Can we talk about those Wolves?
Let's talk about those Wolves.
Yeah.
What do they need this offseason, do you think, Meredith? Me and Derek are kind of on the same boat that they need more shooting. Like, more perimeter shooting would help a lot.
More defense. A less bullheaded coach.
Yeah.
A bench.
Or actually just use the bench. Like, my take on the bench was that it was fine, except it wasn't properly utilized, and he didn't trust it enough, and so no one like Gorgie or Belly could get in rhythm
and
ever.
Now, Belly, you might, for sure. And you might lose Belly this offseason now, too. I mean,
which is just such bad timing, because he's, like, right. Finally come into his own, and I don't know. Talk about a good person. He's, like, a super nice guy, very humble, and every time I see him, he's very nice, and...
You were there for his rookie year, weren't you?
Yeah, I think so.
Do you remember that media day when he came in and he thanked us all for being there?
Can you really?
Yeah, oh no, so this would have been before the WNBA Finals. Okay, yeah, he came in, he's like,
no, I must not have been there.
Yeah, thank you all for being here. And I was like, wait, what?
That's awesome. I did not know that.
But he is so polite and respectful, and yeah, like you said, he's just like the nicest guy.
Mm-hmm. And he's finally, yeah, I mean, not finally, it took him a normal amount of time to adjust, but yeah, it would really suck to lose him after the year that he had this year.
Yeah, it would be tough.
Also, like, I think we had Gerald Green in training camp before the season started.
He did.
And they did not keep him.
Couldn't use
him. And now he's doing what he does.
He's in the Western Conference.
See,
finals.
I don't love Gerald Green's game, but at least he can mm-hmm. hit shots, and at least, you know, he has something a valuable NBA skill that he could even provide for 20 minutes.
So, best case scenario, who would you add to the bench?
Oh,
year?
Boy.
I think Dane Moore had a good list. It was like Wayne Ellington will be out there, Trevor Ariza will be out there. Well, maybe. I don't know how much I love Ariza. I think Ellington would be interesting.
Yeah, that would be interesting for a lot of reasons, having him come back for a second stint.
I loved him when he was here the first time.
Yeah.
He definitely had a green light during those playoffs. He was shooting a ton.
Yeah, he was. And I mean, he's proven himself. I mean, there's obviously enough of a sample size just over the course of his career. He's a legit perimeter shooter, and, I mean, that's something that they need. And, I mean, I've been saying it for weeks now, Meredith. Like, I'm – if they
– Avery Bradley will be out there. Will Barton. Sorry,
yeah.
Tyreek.
I mean, if
Will Barton I really like.
Yeah.
Yeah, Will Barton would be great, although I don't know if they'd be able to get him for the mid-level.
No one's really going to have cap space. Or the known who's going to be a winning team next year is really going to have cap space other than Philly.
Right.
Although Philly replacing Redick with Barton, if they decide, like, we don't need to pay you another $18 million. That'd be interesting.
That would be interesting, especially since I think this morning he said this year was his favorite year of his career so far in Philly.
I would believe it. I mean, those Orlando teams, you know, Dwight, there was drama, the Clippers. I mean, I don't think that Clippers team would have been fun.
But I don't, I mean, the Wolves, right now, we're not a fun team to play on. So, I don't know. I think it might be kind of hard for them to get guys to want to play there right now, as bad as that sounds.
No, I know what you mean, because I think it's going to be hard to sell players on, hey, take less money so you can play less. I mean, that's not where I start my pitch.
Yeah, and just like the, I don't know. I'm really big on team chemistry and like players actually getting along with each other and enjoying each other's company. I feel like it's kind of like where you work, like your coworkers kind of make up, at least for me, I kind of value my coworkers at like 80-90% of my job, just enjoying the people that I work with. And I feel like people kind of forget that with an NBA team, it's like, it's the same thing. You're traveling, you're constantly traveling with these people. You're spending all the time with them, and that's why I just think it's so valuable to have a team that actually enjoys each other, and I think people kind of forget that.
You can see that with the Celtics, I think, especially. Yeah. Like Jaylen Brown.
Celtics for sure.
Yeah, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, like, they, you know, and I don't know how they are with each other off the court, but on the floor, like, there is a lot of chemistry you can see between
I don't even
two.
Need this team to, you know, have fun. I just, you know, just to see them just enjoy the process of winning
for
and playing basketball together. would be nice to see, because there are going to be tough moments that aren't going to be very fun, but at least, you know, you could see them persevering through it and trying to work together and build each other up. And that's something that you just didn't see last year.
Mm-hmm. I think the Lakers are a pretty good example of that. Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Their young core, like, obviously they had a big jump in how many wins they had this year, but I think last year too, like, all those guys genuinely enjoy each other's company, and when you're going through, like, hard times with losses and stuff, if you trust your teammates and you want to play for them and be successful for them, like, it's all building up to the future. Like, the Lakers are building a young core, and it's like the Celtics, like, the people, if all the players genuinely enjoy each other's company, that's kind of invaluable.
And I mean, those teams play so hard. I mean, that Lakers team had no business probably winning as many games as they did, given the talent of the roster and the experience level. But they play hard, too. And that's something that you weren't always able to say about this Wolves team, where you just watch them sometimes. It's like, come on, wake up. This is the Mavericks. You shouldn't be down by 8 in the third quarter. You know, things like that.
I think that's kind of what I was getting at earlier with Wolves Twitter. Like, it was fun to watch when they were in the 3 seed, and even then, I think people were complaining about, like, them just not looking like they were enjoying playing. And when Jimmy's injury hit and they kind of slid, like, it was just so obvious that none of them were having fun. I think that's why, like, the Denver game at the end was so frustrating, because the amount of energy they played with in that game, and, like, how much the crowd was into it and how the players were excited. I was just, the whole time I was just thinking, like, couldn't we have played to not that level, but, like, a similar level the whole season? They just kind of showed what they could have been, and it was kind of frustrating. It's like, we should have been playing with that energy all season.
And you would think if they had been, then there wouldn't have been losses to Atlanta, Orlando,
every non-playoff team on the road but the Knicks.
Yeah, the Suns twice. I mean, come on.
They lost the season series to the Grizzlies.
Yes.
Yes, at home, that loss at home, like, I don't know. People, there was a lot of, like, you should be grateful it's been so long, which I totally get from an outsider perspective, but to watch that team every game, and it was just the most frustrating thing, because, like, not only the energy and, like, people not looking excited, but the way the offense was being run, you could tell, like, it was not being maximized to its full potential.
I think it's just so frustrating. Seeing those glimpses, you know, really makes it hard to enjoy the process as someone, you know, who's following the team or covering them or watching them or whatever it is, however you engage with this team, makes it really hard to enjoy. And I think you see, like, oh, well, they're the third seed, and you're like, they don't play any defense. They don't make any shots. These other teams are just really unlucky. And it just feels like a house of cards. And they've just got lucky for three quarters of a season. And they really didn't have what it took to hold on to a playoff spot like that. It
wasn't sustainable.
I mean, how is it that Portland can have, you know, 2 good months every season and jump up the standings like crazy and have everyone go, oh, are the Blazers a contender? No, they're absolutely not a contender. They do this every year. And it's never that
way.
Yeah,
I kind of fell for it with the Blazers this year.
I feel like we've been waiting for them just to die off for 3 years, and it just hasn't happened.
Well, and they're kind of in an interesting spot too, because what do they do? I mean, they're not gonna trade Dame or CJ, and they've got a bunch of other bad contracts on the roster. So, like, what do they do? I mean,
yeah,
I don't know.
Like, I was going to say, you just can't fire Neil O'Shea and just be like, all right, someone else fix this. Like, that's not going to help you out anymore.
Yeah. I saw something this morning that said, like, LaMarcus kind of wished that he could go back to Portland.
Really?
How much does he hate San Antonio? Almost wanted out last year, didn't he?
He was.
I thought wasn't there rumors about a trade?
He was mad at the end of last year, yeah. And supposedly he and Pop kind of, like, patched that whole thing up. But, yeah. I mean, it is interesting.
And Pop kept praising him, like, overly praising him in the playoffs, which I thought was kind of interesting, because I had forgotten that they had that whole, like, there was a time where it was pretty clear that he was unhappy and Pop was not happy with him. I think, like, the Kawhi Leonard thing kind of pushed the Pop to kind of overly praise him, but yeah, I don't know. It'd be interesting to see what happens there, too.
Well, Pop also had that falling out with Dwayne Dedman last year, too. Where, you know, he brings him in as a free agent, plays early, but by the end of the season, he is nailed to the bench, and he's a Hawk this season.
Yeah. I feel like that kind of happens. I think Pop and Gasol has something, too. I feel like that kind of happens a lot over there. I mean, I don't really know, but my guess would be it's because of the style of basketball that they play. It's like no one's treated above anyone else, and that's kind of like WNBA style basketball, and that's why I think there's so much team chemistry on WNBA teams. But
yeah.
I don't know that at this point, like, obviously Pop has been super successful and he has a lot of people that follow his lead and buy in, but when you have like some of the bigger stars that feel like they're entitled to a little more, like, kind of leads to stuff like that.
I think that happens in a lot of organizations that have a really strong culture, like Miami. You see that with, you know, guys like Hassan Whiteside.
Yeah.
Or, you know, when Eddie Curry was there even. Like, if you don't fit in, you're going to clash and you're going to have problems. They're not just going to, you know, baby your ego and, you know, try to appease you.
Jumping sports here, but the New England Patriots, it's kind of, we've seen that too.
Oh, yeah.
Bill Belichick is not afraid, like, Bill Belichick was not afraid to trade Randy Moss away. I mean, he traded him back here, but he was not afraid to do that. And this is a Hall of Fame wide receiver.
Like you
caught,
and 20 touchdowns for me 2 years ago? And
right.
I will trade you.
Trade you so quickly. But, yeah, I mean, that is kind of what we're seeing with San Antonio, too. And now this Kawhi thing, I mean, I don't know how that's going to – and it doesn't look like he's going to – It does not look like Kawhi is going to be in a Spurs uniform next year. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they'll patch things up. But right now, it is not looking good down there.
Yeah.
Well.
I have no idea. All we do at work is just hypothesize about these things, but don't actually have any insider information.
Exactly. Well, Meredith, we're going to have you in. You know, maybe when you come up for the WNBA All-Star Game, maybe we'll have you in studio and do a little taping or something.
For
We'd
sure.
love to have you on again.
That'd be awesome.
That'd be fun.
So thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, for sure. It was great. And we'll talk to you again soon, all right?
Sounds good. Thanks
Meredith.
All right, Meredith Minko joining us here on Raised by Wolves. And that was a good talk.
At MURR Minx on Twitter.
Yep.
If you're looking to follow her if you don't already.
She's a good follow. She's a lot of fun. And it was good to have her on with us. So, yeah, I mean, this off season is going to be really, really interesting, as every NBA off season is. There's always, every year, there's something where you're, you know, so many teams that either don't make the playoffs or get bounced from the playoffs. There's so many question marks. I mean, we talked about Portland, San Antonio. I mean, you know, Philadelphia. I mean, there's.
What are the Pelicans do?
Yeah, what are the Pelicans going to do? Is Boogie going to be back there, you know, and all this stuff?
You know,
the Wolves, obviously.
Isn't this the beauty, though, of having great teams like the Rockets and the Warriors in the league? They expose the lesser teams, and then the lesser teams do something drastic to get on their level. The Rockets did it when they moved away from Dwight because Dwight wanted to freaking post up more. Also not what I wanted to say.
Did you see his comments the other day? About Russell Westbrook needing to sacrifice more? Dwight, come on.
He has the awareness of a dead squirrel. Zero self-awareness in that guy. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. That was the epitome of the pot calling the kettle black and throwing the kettle on a glass house or something.
I cackled when I saw that, when I read that quote. It's like, but Dwight, come on, dude.
It just makes me more curious to see what the Wolves are going to do in response to losing to the Rockets and seeing just how they stacked up against the rest of the league with Thibodeau's revamped team. I'm really interested in seeing the changes of that. Yeah. I think what great teams push the other teams to do, you know, can inspire innovation and creativity and really just challenge teams, you know, not just to settle for the status quo, especially when they are competitive like the Timberwolves were this season.
Yeah, and with the Wolves in particular, I mean, look, they it was a great step, I think, making the playoffs and getting, you know, Towns especially and Wiggins too, some playoff experience, and Tyus and some of these other younger guys too, getting them playoff experience. But there's still some work to be done. And we saw with the series against the Rockets how much more work that they need to do in terms of just sort of putting this team together. And, you know, with the cap situation being the way it is, I've been saying it for weeks, and I'm sure you agree with me, they got to get pretty creative this offseason to go and get – I mean, they've got the mid-level, so they'll be able to get
somebody
with that.
They can't waste Justin Patton, like you said. They can't waste this OKC pick.
Yes, you've got to – because – and you hit on it. You know, a selling point of, hey, come in here, take less money, and play less minutes. That's going to be a tough sell on a lot of free agents. So because of that, you've got – okay, you've got a young player that you got in the Butler trade, Justin Patton. You got to find something for him next year. You got to figure out, even if it's a minor thing, even if it's a small role, you've got to get something out of him.
12 minutes, you don't let your man score,
right,
and you rebound.
Defend and rebound. Yeah, even if it's something like that. This Oklahoma City pick, I mean...
I think they'd be ill-advised to trade that. I really
yeah,
do.
Unless they're going to get, like, an impact player. The only way I would want to trade that pick, and this is just me talking, the only way that I would want them to trade that pick is if they're going to get, you know, a mid-20s good rotation player in return.
Those guys are always on the market, too.
Right. Well, that's the other thing. I mean, you know, I mean, you're that, but otherwise, use the pick in the draft. And get it right. Get it right.
You know, and the thing
you have to.
And what I think part of that too, and I forget, it might have been Mack and Judge who were also talking about this, you know, taking Chris Dunn over Jamal Murray, even though Jamal Murray is the better NBA player now. And how they took Chris Dunn because he was more NBA ready. That really just tells me that you don't really want to coach these guys up. You don't really want to develop.
Yeah.
Or maybe you just don't know how to, because that's one thing we haven't really seen this team do. I mean, Karl-Anthony Towns improved probably because Karl-Anthony Towns is a really talented player, and if he puts in the work, he's just going to get better.
Yeah.
And
but we've seen Andrew Wiggins regress on the offensive end. You know, Tyus is better than what he was as a rookie, but you'd still want to see
playoffs,
him develop more.
Manny, if Terry Rozier or Donovan Mitchell were on this team, would they be at the same level that they are now?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think
so
at all. I don't think they'd be playing. They would have had Anthony Brown and Marcus George's Hunt's role this season, which would be a crying shame.
And again, you know, talking about those two guys, like...
They could do things.
Why are they here? I'm asking that question again. Why are they here?
The roster minimum is 10.
If you're not going to try and develop them and let them play. I mean, during the regular season, you got to let them play so that... If you get to the playoffs and somebody gets injured, or if you're going
foul
if you're,
trouble,
or if you're in game 55 or whatever it was, and Jimmy Butler gets hurt, then Marcus George's Hunt or Anthony Brown is ready to step in into a little bit more of a significant role because you've been playing them a little bit more throughout the season,
and they've seen
even
live
if it's
rounds.
In garbage time, even if it's in garbage time, you're down by 20 with 3 minutes left.
You know, though,
put them in the game. Put them in the game.
Having them play against, you know, even the Grizzlies D-leaguers or whatever, G-leaguers, is going to be beneficial because that guy's still playing for a spot. He's out there. He's going to play hard. He's got something to prove. Whoever the Wolves put in there is going to have something to prove. It's could be valuable experience.
Well, what was it? The last Clippers game, and the Wolves were up big.
And Towns and starters.
And Towns and Wiggins and... And, you know, Jang and Teague, you know, they're all still in the game. And I'm like, they're not, those are your prominent guys, but they're not learning anything. They're not gaining anything by playing in garbage time against Sam Decker and Wesley Johnson with two minutes left.
Barely trying at that point because
they George's Hunt and Anthony Brown in the game. Let them play. Like, let them get their feet wet.
You know, and put Aaron Brooks in there instead of Jeff Teague. At least he's a veteran point guard. You're like, all right, kid, go to that spot. Go to the spot and I'll hit you there. When you get there, go there. You know, things like that. There's still that kind of guidance and on the floor coaching that you can get because he does. I mean, honestly, having a guy like Aaron Brooks as your third point guard is smart. He's been around to a lot of teams, played a lot of different styles, he's seen stuff. That's a good guy to have play with the young guys like that. Having Jeff Teague out there, like you said, serves no purpose other than risking injury.
Right. You know, unless you're going to have Teague out there and you're going to put George's Hunter Brown or somebody in there with him, maybe, okay, fine. You're going to leave Teague in the game, fine. But
Teague had the MCL sprain or whatever right. It was, and it's rest these guys. I mean, so many teams are researching, you know, the effects of fatigue and, you know,
fatigue
how to
is
rest.
A big thing for me. Like, I just don't, you know, the injury part. I mean, did Jimmy get hurt because he played too many minutes? No. I mean, he was coming off 8 days off. He didn't play in the All-Star game. It was in the third quarter.
And
of the
he plays
game.
Like in just, he has a very ferocious playing style.
Right.
Like,
so I don't know. I can't sit here and say that Jimmy getting hurt in that Rockets game was because he played too many minutes. But I do buy into the idea of getting to the end of the season and look no further. I think a perfect example of this was Taj Gibson. You play heavy minutes throughout the year and you get to the end of the season, you get to the playoffs and you're gassed. Like Taj was not the same guy.
He was not meant to play that many minutes.
Yeah, Taj was not. By the time we got to game 81, game 82, and Taj was great in that Nuggets game at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. He was great. He did his defense on Jokic down the stretch was fantastic, obviously. And that's why you have a guy like Taj in your roster.
Having a 26, 22 minute split with him and Gorgie would have been ideal.
Exactly. But you could see in that Rockets series, you know, and schematically, it probably wasn't, you know, Taj probably isn't the ideal guy you want going up against the Rockets. But you could also see he was gassed.
Does he want to bang against Clint Capella and then chase Ryan Anderson around the perimeter? Probably not at that point.
Right. So, I don't know. There's just, I think getting to the playoffs, we've been talking about this for weeks. Getting to the playoffs was a huge step, and I think it was big, and I think it was important. But, you know, there's some work to do.
I do think that it's smart for, you know, not patting ourselves on the back, but, you know, everyone else too to recognize that just because the result was what we wanted, the process could still be
a lot better.
Improved immensely. And that is really the rub.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right, that's going to do it for us. Whew. I think we got everything off our chest for this week.
This is going to be one of the lengthier ones.
Yes, this is, I think we went over an hour there. Thanks to Meredith Minko for joining us. That was great. That was a lot of fun talking with her. And I'm serious. We should have her on, you know, when she comes up for the All-Star game.
You know, that worked
summer.
Really well with Fred.
Yeah.
You know, when he was in town, we had Fred Katz on. Having Meredith involved there, too, would be pretty cool.
Yeah, so we'll try and get that done and get that set up. But thanks to her for joining us this week. If you want to find the Raised by Wolves podcast on other outlets, you can always find us on iTunes. Just search Raised by Wolves and give us a friendly rating, maybe. I don't know. That's up to you. But we would appreciate a friendly rating. You can find us at 1500ESPN.com, of course, podcast1.com as well. We were brought to you by TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand and official TV of the Minnesota Timberwolves. For Derek James, I am Manny Hill. Enjoy your NBA basketball. There's still a lot left to be played. It's conference finals starting up here this weekend, and enjoy it. We'll talk to you next week.